Application day camp.
Here we go. All right, welcome to another study of 1 Timothy.
We had one, I don't think we should have another.
We will finish, hopefully we'll finish lesson number 6 here today. Does everybody have a worksheet? We're all okay that way? Just want to make sure. I think we're on number 3, is kind of where we are at. And I think it'd be good for us just to read the verses 1 through 7 of chapter 3 of 1 Timothy to give us our bearings here today. So anybody like to read a verse or two or whatever, how would everyone do it? We'll just kind of go around the table clockwise. Dave passes. Jan?
I'll read.
Okay, well, I'll read the first verse.
Okay.
Here is a trustworthy saying. If anyone sets his heart on being an overseer, he desires a noble task.
Now the overseer must be above reproach, the husband of but one wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach.
Not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money.
I never was able to find my place, so I'm going to pass.
Okay, 4.
Number 4.
You want
me to go ahead.
I thought we were just doing 3.
He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him with proper respect.
But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God?
I'll pass.
He must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil.
Moreover, he must be well thought of by outsiders so that he may not fall into disgrace, into a snare of the devil.
Oofta, oofta, oofta. So keep in mind now that Paul is writing to Timothy, his spiritual son. He's talking about just the leadership of church leadership and kind of what goes along with it. And so we get to this portion of scripture in Timothy where he is talking about overseer. What is an overseer? What's your understanding of an overseer?
Boss.
A manager.
CEO.
The CEO, okay. All right. You know, there can be more contemporary names given toward an overseer today than what you have here. Anything like that come to your mind today?
Elder
or bishop would be something. Overseer. Servant. Looking at the church or churches, making sure that what they are teaching goes along with what is said in the Bible, is in the scriptures.
How about council member?
A council member. Well, that would be an interesting thing, too, as we talk about this.
Pastor.
And, you know, pastor will kind of get in there, too. Sometimes a pastor can be like an elder. You know, because he's an elder or a preaching kind of a elder who can be a pastor. And sometimes you look at that in those two offices, two places that can be like that. But that's not looked upon like that in every denomination type of a thing. Of course, at this time, there is no denominations that Paul is writing to Timothy of just saying, hey, this is the early beginning of the Christian faith, the Christian church as it spreads. And they just want to need some kind of help and guidance as far as what to be looking for and how to do the how do we do this when we get a church together, when believers come together, now what do we do? And so that's where the Apostle Paul here is being helpful for Timothy, who is a pastor in what town? At the time of this writing, Timothy is where? Starts with an E.
Ephesus.
So, I don't know how long Timothy is there in Ephesus. I think he eventually ends up going to Philippi, and then he has more contact with Paul, and he's in prison the second time. It's when he writes 2 Timothy is when he's in prison. And so he's talking about overseers. So we're talking about it can be a church leader in a church. And then he gives a description as far as characteristics, the things that you look for in a person who is going to have this kind of responsibility in a church. Now, keep in mind that the list that you read here or that's given here, there's no one who's perfect. And this is a pretty perfect list. If you look for everything in here on somebody in the church, you're not going to find it. You're going to find flaws here and there. And I remember of one man many years ago who he felt so bad that his children were not following the Lord. And he was an elder in the church. And he just felt he could never be an elder because he'd look at his kids. And he was very deeply affected by that. Well, in the meantime, he has died, but each one of his kids are believers today, which is kind of like a miraculous thing. And they're involved in a church, but before when he was there, they didn't want to have nothing to do with the church, or really with their mom and dad, because they were looked upon as being too spiritual for them. So, I mean, it's just kind of interesting how it goes here. So, as we look at number three on our sheet here, it's just listing the characteristics of an overseer. So, what's the first one that comes up on the list?
Above reproach.
Yeah, what does that mean? Above reproach. It sounds pretty good. Above reproach, which means what?
Respectable?
A respectable person, yeah. It's kind of like another word for reproach would be blameless. His conduct, there's no accusations against his conduct. It's kind of above reproach. When you think of him, it's go like, yeah, good person. You know, it's be a good guy here. What's the second one that we come to?
Husband of one wife.
Right? Husband of but one wife. Now that's an easy one there, an easy one to look at there too, because when you get out onto like the West Coast or the East Coast, there's been churches that have been planted that have people in them where there's been a lot of divorce. So then what do you do when you come to a situation like that with a church and you go like, hey, there's some good leaders here, but in their background, there's divorce there. So does that eliminate them from being an elder in this church, or being a church leader because of that? You know, and those have been things that have been really looked upon and talked about and discussed for many years, type of a thing. But it's kind of, in some of those cases, it was like, well, you know, you have to look upon kind of like what happened where there was a divorce. You know, was there any kind of reconciliation tried or whatever? Or is now is the other person remarried? Well, if it's remarried, there's nothing you can do about it. And so you run into different issues that you just got to kind of deal with. And you do a lot of praying of just saying, Lord, give us direction of what you'd want us to do in this place and in this church, type of a thing. So, but here it's got, you know, husband of one wife. So does that mean you've been divorced, you remarried, you still got one wife, or not? There's a lot of different ways that you can look at some of these things. And then you got to go back, okay, where's Paul at? When Paul is talking about this back in 63 AD, which is close to 2,000 years ago, how is he looking at it? At that time, there was probably not a whole lot of divorce as we have today. But he's looking at there's a very high standard that is there for anyone who is going to be serving on a church board or a place of leadership in the church. That's really where Paul is coming from.
I don't think he was talking about a guy that sleeps around.
Well, yeah. Well, then he would not be above reproach, would he?
But he also is not honoring his wife.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of different domino effect that goes along with a lot of these things. Yeah, that's true. There's pastors who do that. pastors who are unfaithful to their wife and run off with the church secretary or other people that they're counseling type of thing. So, go ahead, Bobby. I'm sorry.
Well, I crossed my mind. Is this a time over past the time when people had more than one wife?
That's what I was wondering. Like Solomon had many wives.
Well, yeah.
David had many wives. So maybe that's why.
Yeah, we're way past Solomon's time. He's looking at.
I didn't know how far.
At that particular time, you know, it's like right around that period of history in the 60s, 60 ADs, probably 20 years before that, and kind of where things are at that time. But you look at a lot of the women that. You know, if there's a lot of divorce, what would women do to make a living? I mean, it was kind of, I just don't think divorce was like it is today. Because if the man is lost in a household setting, it really puts a lot of strain and pressure on the woman. Like, how is she going to care for the kids? I mean, what is she going to... She couldn't have a job like we think of women be able to get jobs today. She, in that culture, at that time, women didn't have a... Well, not all of them, but you have Lydia, who was a dealer in purple. But for the most part, it wasn't one of those things where women have jobs. If it was, it was probably... Wherever they could make some money on the side, they would do that just to take care of their kids. As any mom, as you know, would be like that. So anyway, you know, we just kind of go on down the line here. Number three, of course, depends upon your Bible translation. You might have more or less here. I'm not sure. But number three, what comes next?
Temperate.
Yeah, I'm not sure what temperate means. Anybody here know what temperate means?
Mine says sober-minded.
Serious.
I'm not drunk.
That eliminates me.
Drunkard.
Drunkard comes later.
Yeah. Temperate?
Oh, yeah, I see.
Sober-minded.
Sober-minded.
Clear-minded.
It must, yeah, I would say that would be.
Be of clear conscience, clear mind, something like that. Okay. Number four.
Self-control.
Yeah. Is that part of the fruit of the Spirit as well?
Yes.
That one is? Yeah. Self-control. Number five.
Respectable.
Yeah. Six.
Hospitable.
Someone who enjoys being with people. No other. What if you're a person that doesn't like people? Well, you probably shouldn't be a church leader. there's one thing wrong with the church. It's made of people. I don't like people. Hospitable. You enjoy someone who will his house will be open, and if he sees you or something like that, he's very hospitable. Makes you feel that you are somebody of worth and notices you. Number seven.
Able to teach.
Yeah, that's... Sometimes you run into that quite a bit. You can have church leaders, but they don't want to teach. They don't want to be a teacher of the Bible because a lot of times they don't feel like they know much. I just kind of say, like, we all got to start somewhere. I didn't know anything about the Bible either. But you got to start somewhere. And oftentimes a teacher will learn more than the students. And you probably have noticed that sometimes even as a Sunday school teacher. You learn more than the students do. Because it's a good way to teach and learn yourself. So if you're asked to be a Sunday school teacher or a Bible study teacher, it's like, don't just throw that out the window right away, but just say, I'll try it. One time, I'll try it. I'll do it 1 week, but that's it. But you know, but there's things you will learn because you put yourself, and you're willing to do that in your life. So don't just discard that right away. Next one, 8. Not given to drunkenness. So it's kind of like, you know, don't be controlled by alcohol. I've been drunk many times early on in life. Not proud to say that, but Jesus changed that whole perspective in my life. And something I never thought he could ever do, but he can.
So is drinking in general the same as drunkenness?
Well, drunkenness is when you
really don't know what
you're under the influence, pretty. Yeah. You're loop-de-doo.
Okay. But like they always had wine in biblical times, so that was alcohol, even though they didn't know it.
Yeah, and then some, you know, they had a debate with that too. Some say, well, the wine was not alcoholic.
No, oh, alcohol. Really?
It's called wine, but it was not alcohol in it. And some say, like, oh, yes, it was. You know, so you got that whole debate there, too, you know, with it. But it comes down here, it's like you don't want to be controlled by the alcohol. That is the key thing. Can some people handle alcohol better than others?
Yes.
Some can. I don't understand it all.
I'm good.
I was going to see if Connie was going to come.
Oh.
Yeah, the horse gal, but that's not her.
Oh.
Yeah. So, all right, let's number 9.
Gentle.
Not violent.
Yeah, you know, looking for a person that's not violent, but is a gentle person. You know, someone who is able to handle things in a way that doesn't involve being violent. 10.
Not quarrelsome.
Quarrelsome.
Yeah. Someone who doesn't like to argue. You know people who do like to argue?
Oh, yeah.
But here's someone who doesn't, you know, not quarrelsome. You know, you listen. It's better to listen
not
than
quarrelsome.
To win an argument or be in an argument.
Quarrelsome.
11.
Not a lover of money?
Yeah, not a lover of money, so it doesn't matter.
Would that be the same as greedy kind
of
thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wants a lover.
That's 11. Not a lover of money. 12.
Manage his own family well.
Yeah. And then 13.
Must not be a recent convert.
Yep. So it means it's good that there's been some time that has passed since you have been a follower of Jesus. And the reasons are that there should be some maturity that takes place there, that because you can fall into the trap. If you're a really young convert, a recent believer, you can become conceited. Conceited is what?
Pride.
It's pride. You're full of pride. It's like you think you know, now you've got authority. Now that you have some kind of status. But that should have nothing to do with being a leader.
But lots of times recent converts are so enthusiastic.
Well, they are. Yeah, they can be, but they're going to be kind of like, that's where they kind of need to be mentored. Be put under somebody who has been a believer for a longer time than they have to go like, hey, cool your jets. You know, you don't have to be, we know you're excited, but someday the excitement's going to wane. You won't always be excited. Nothing wrong with being excited, but you don't have to let that take charge and take control of you and then say, well, I'm just too excited and I got carried away. You kind of don't want to get carried away.
I know a few people that have kept that enthusiasm. Yeah. They come to mind Nancy Letcher.
Yeah.
You know, she's just, wow.
Now, has she always been that way? I mean, I don't know her.
Well,
as many years
I've known her, but not in her past, necessarily.
Okay.
It came to her.
I think Rosa had a big influence on Nancy.
Well, yeah.
And I don't know Rosa. I never knew Rosa either.
She had an enthusiasm also.
She
was more docile about it than Nancy.
Ah, okay.
As far as being true to the heart believers, I couldn't draw a line.
I mean, I hear a lot of things from about Rosa from different people that she was just a phenomenal person, you know, with that. So, and then the four is a 14. Did we do 13? 14.
Yeah, take care of those children.
Well, we didn't put teach their children. I put that in separate. I put that down as 13.
Okay. Yeah, and I probably got that with manages his own family well. Would probably go under that too.
Take care of God's church should be in there.
Yeah. It's kind of, if you can't take care of your own family, then how can you take care of God's church? That's a huge one too. I mean, I had to deal with that. As having small kids, and as they grow up, and I go like, well, so far so good. And I go like, here come the teenage years. What is that going to be like? And I don't want people looking at our kids differently because they're PK kids or preacher kids, and therefore the friends they have or they can't have friends because they got parents like we are. You know, we didn't really wrestle too much with that. And I think we asked our girls along the way too, just saying like, you know, if you tell your friends that your mom or that your dad's a pastor, and does that affect you at all? You know, and they kind of go like, well, it didn't seem to be. So I go like, whew. But that can always change as time goes on.
One day I was taking, I'll just say, one of our daughters to school. And I don't remember what we were talking about. And she said to me, she goes, Mom, you just don't know how much I want to rebel. But she didn't. I mean, she knew it was wrong, but it was that desire, you know, and probably seeing her classmates doing things. It was like, I just thought, I've never forgotten that part.
Well, she wanted to take after the kids in the congregation.
Yeah, well, sometimes that's true too, yeah. What did you say, Norma?
I said that started young. You started teaching her long before she got to be a teenager.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah. And that helps.
You don't know how much I want to rebel.
In verse 7, it says, be well thought of by outsiders. Is that one of them or no?
Yeah, that's what I got for 14.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You know, have a good reputation with outsiders. Yeah. I mean, it's outside the church. It's like, you know, people of all different backgrounds and things like that. I just bring this out that, you know, what I got for 12, 13, and 14, look at the pronoun. The pronoun is referred to as what? Paul is referring to as church leaders here. He would be looking at whom in particular?
Men.
Yes. Which is kind of an interesting thing. So, I mean, like the last three that I got on here is with a he. It's a he pronoun. And of course, you got a husband. Of course, we know a husband is a man, a husband of but one wife type of thing. So as an overseer, that was something that was very important for Paul to pass on to the church and to the other leaders within the church, these kinds of characteristics of what to look for. I've always said that as a pastor throughout the years that, you know, if you don't have people with some of these characteristics, you're better off not having anybody serving on the board or on a council. It's just very important that you have these things. I heard from one pastor many years ago of, it's like wood. You know, there's soft wood and there's hard wood. You know, when it comes to an overseer, you want to have oak kind of people. More of a hard wood rather than a soft wood. It's just like pine. And it's always stuck with me. I go like, you know, that's really true. The problem that happens sometimes with that is that, you know, people then can start taking it out on the pastor because you don't have sometimes church leaders, that the pastor then becomes a tyrant or a dictator. And in some cases, that's true. But it's just important that the people that are chosen or asked to serve on a church, it is important that you're looking for things that will be, that as a church as a whole, that will be helpful in how God sees them. Because you go back to, you know, what did the people want for their first king? Who was it that they wanted?
Saul.
It was Saul. And what was it about Saul that they wanted Saul?
Good-looking.
He was tall, dark, and handsome. He'd make a great king from all the other kings around them, all the kingdoms around them. And it turned out that the people rejected God and they wanted a man to be a king like the rest of the countries had. And when they chose Saul, he turned out to be what?
A bad leader.
He was not a good king.
No. Well, he started out good until he had pride problems.
Well, yeah. It was kind of like, it sounded like he never really wanted himself either. It seemed like he was hiding and he did crazy things too. But the people, because of, they looked at the outwardness of him, thought that he would make a great king. And that God just said, you can't, it's not the outward that is important, it's what is in the heart. That's what you look for, what's inside. So,
back to Saul. I'm not a scholar. I don't pretend to be a scholar of the Bible, but in reading about Saul in the Old Testament, mm-hmm. I always figured he had a mental
issue.
He really, the older he got, the more mental issues he developed.
Yeah. Yeah, and eventually, I mean, I think there was a prophet that came and kind of anointed somebody else to be king versus Saul. Who came after
Samuel? David.
Oh, he anointed David. Huh? Mm-hmm. David became, of course, David's always been looked upon as the greatest king Israel's ever had. And out of David's line is kind of where Jesus comes from as well. And that his, as a Messiah, he would be the kingdom will never end because he will be the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords.
I think one of the saddest things in the Bible that I've read is with Saul. I think, I don't know where it is for sure, but it says, I think it says the Spirit of God left him. You know, and I just think, oh, how devastating that would be. You know, because Saul was just all about himself, like we said, but I think that's such a sad statement.
I missed him.
Give Bruce
a rubber band. Go down to Bruce.
He did the cutest thing one day with the rubber band. There was a fly in here and nobody could get it. He said, "Well, give me a rubber band and I'll get it."
Yeah.
First time.
Wow.
That fly.
That's pretty impressive.
So if you see a fly around here, we all get nervous because we know that he's going to be shooting.
Rubber bands.
It was good.
I mean, another sad part, though, is really, Solomon. I mean, Solomon started out great, mm-hmm. asking for just wisdom to guide the people, and he ended up marrying or having 700 concubines or something like that. You know what I mean? The very thing he was warned not to do, he ended up doing. And so, I mean, that's another sad thing. He started out great and ended not so great. All right, let's just go on to number four. Said Paul addresses four main categories of an overseer. The first one, A, overseer, the overseer's personal and inner life. That is what he tends to look at in this portion of Scripture. There's nothing wrong with someone wanting to be an overseer. I mean, usually we find where, you know, some of the thinking can be sometimes the office goes looking for the person. And for somebody who wants to be an overseer, you get a little bit more, well, I'm not really sure if that's the right way to do it or not. But, you know, reading what it has here, it's like if somebody desires to be an overseer, I think people would really be open to that and be looking at some of these characteristics of saying, yeah, it'd probably be okay for that person to serve in that way. The second one, the overseer's home life. Of course, I've got to give you verses there where you find these things. You know, what if you have a pastor who cannot handle money and goes in debt? And when it comes time to, well, just say for some churches are mindful of that. Some churches will try to help the guy by paying for his bills. Some are going like, we're just glad he's going to leave because he has wrecked the reputation of the church in the community because he's charged things and has never paid for things. You know, you can run into things like that. And so you can run into things where pastors' children can really ruin it for the pastor. Or sometimes a pastor can ruin it for the family. There's just a lot of different dynamics that can take place in a person's life or things that happen within the church over the years. So I'm just saying that it's very important how a pastor does handle his home life and marriage and children. Do the children like to be with the dad or with the mom? Or do they want to stay away from them? And of course it depends upon the child sometimes. Sometimes there's been very good parents where children just decided they don't want nothing to do with the kid, with the parents. And it can be all different kinds of things there too. So it just depends upon what's all going on in throughout the life of a pastor and within the church too. Are you going to find a perfect pastor? Sure. I'm glad you said no.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Are you going to find a perfect church? You'll never find a perfect church.
The heart of joy. What do you think?
It's close. Yeah. So, yeah, the overseer's church life, you know, there again, it's...
Is that verse C?
Verse 6, which says... He must not be a recent convert or he become conceited or fall under the same judgment as the devil. You know, it's just, he's got to have a heart for people. You got a pastor that doesn't have a heart for people. And you kind of, I just scratch my head and I go like, well, why would God want this person then to be a pastor if he doesn't like people? God likes people. He's got shepherds. Pastors are sometimes shepherds. They like to be with the sheep. They'll smell like the sheep. They'll want to hang out with the people, get to know people. To me, that's just a given that becomes a part of being a pastor. So, I mean, that's just helpful, I guess, if you're ever on a call committee and you look for another pastor. It's kind of like these are things that you look for or things that you ask about that they then in turn can give you answers to or they can talk for themselves. And of course, for humility is also very important to look for. Are they able to say like, "Yeah, I mess up there. I'm really not strong at that point in the ministry." You know, whatever that is. And so, I mean, you got to just kind of take that all into consideration as well. Are they able to acknowledge their shortcomings rather than just the strengths? Because we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. And so sometimes we know what they are, sometimes we don't. But if you are confronted sometimes, it happens, are you able to handle that? Or will you then take out a vendetta and want to destroy the person who accuses you of something that never happened? Sometimes that does happen. The last one, the overseer's life in the world of the unsaved. People who do not believe. Are they okay with an overseer? It doesn't have to be a pastor. Just they enjoy being around the person. If they see them, they will say hi. They'll enjoy a conversation. Yada, yada, yada. But there should be someone that can be comfortable enough with people who are outside of the church or in the church type of thing. And that's something that, you know, a person cannot just do that. That's something that happens over time in a person's life. And sometimes background has a lot to do with that. When I think of my parents, I'm going like, there's a lot of things I don't like how my parents brought us up. But there's a lot of things that I see today that I didn't see earlier in life, that they could hang out with all kinds of people, and everybody drank. But I got to thinking, I'm going like, they could get along with everybody. Even though they didn't often do what they did to a point. But I just go like, they taught me that you can have a lot of friends and get along with a lot of people. You don't have to do what they do. You just take an interest in them and ask questions. So, but I didn't see that right away. And that's where you get into sometimes when you first come to know Christ, you can be really excited. But then you start getting critical of mom and dad. Why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? And I mean, I was that way. But over time, you kind of mellow out. And you still got to stand on what God's word says and live on that. All right, so it takes us to the last question, which is just one opened up for anybody. What do you think about this criteria for church leadership? We're just doing overseers. I think the next part deals with deacons, which is kind of like trustees today. That's got another list that's there. But this is kind of like for the spiritual aspect of leadership in the church.
Well, it's the perfect standard that nobody can measure up to. They could try. We should all strive to do that. It's a good list. It is a good list.
Yeah, it really is.
Just as long as we remember this, not going to be off.
Right. If you come across anyone who says, I'm all of these on that list, throw them out right away. But, I just think that, this is the first time I've ever gone through 1 Timothy as a study myself. But I think a lot of times, a lot of people have never, ever studied 1 Timothy. And so I just thought, I started reading and I'm going like, oh, no. I think I'm starting to eat more than I can chew as we see what's coming up in here. But there's a lot of good teachings and good things in here that I think apply to today.
It's a starting point. You need something to go by, and this gives you a handle.
Yeah.
May not all apply, or we can't get them to all apply, but it's a starting point thing to look for.
Gives you something to chew on.
Yeah.
Something to think about as well. Good, thanks. Anybody else, what do you think about kind of where we're at here today?
I mean, if you just even looking at that whole list, it's kind of like, as Christians, what we should all strive to be. Mm-hmm. Whether we're an overseer or not.
Yeah.
They don't have to be the deacon to strive for these qualities or the pastor.
Those
are all Christian qualities.
Yep. So you can kind of see, as Paul's thinking about this, he's getting to the end of his life. He wants to just pass on what is going to be good for those who will follow and for the church. And of course, and he's always wrestled with him being not probably the best person for this, because he was a persecutor of the church. And he never forgets that. If he looks at who's the worst sinner of them all, Paul would be the first to say that he was. And I'm going like, he's really hard on himself in a lot of ways, but you can understand why he says what he says and what he believed. But when you think of the kind of man that he went out to become and what he taught and where he went, man, I don't know who else you could have picked who could have done a great job as he did, even though you might not agree with everything that he did. Or where he went.
Well, Paul's background, him being originally a Pharisee and an educated, and he was working his way to the top of the Pharisees. So he was ingrained in the law and in ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And then it crashing down on the road to Damascus.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in his letters, don't you think that the law kind of, you know, I'm not saying he didn't have faith, he did,
mm-hmm.
but the law certainly comes through in his letters.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, he wrote his letters a lot later after his conversion. And so he's had some time to kind of sort this all through and think it through and talk with people. And so what we have in the New Testament is, of course, it's inspired by the Holy Spirit, what he wrote for us today, that it's just worthwhile. I mean, it goes to show that no one is bad enough where God cannot get a hold of his or her life. Just think of Paul. Man, there's someone that you'd say the God would just give up on, it would have been him. I mean, I would have gave up on him. But it's the very man that God uses in a very powerful way in spreading the gospel. You know, and he didn't always get along with some of the other disciples, like with Peter. I mean, he and Peter had the cahoots, and I think he got in the cahoots with John Mark. But then Barnabas comes up and goes along with John Mark, and Barnabas' name means son of encouragement. John Mark needed somebody like Barnabas to come beside him, where Paul just says, yeah, he left me once, I'm not going to ever have him with me again. You know, and he chose somebody else. He chose Silas. And so, you know, there's just different kind of makeups and personalities that seem to work and click, and yet God knows that. And he can cross us with paths with people along the way in life that we never, ever thought we would have anything in common with. And we end up doing.
Don't you think that God chose Paul because he was such a nasty person with the Christians? I think he was, he was a leader in persecution.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was an answered prayer. I think the Christians were saying, why are we being persecuted?
Yeah.
So God converts the persecutor.
Yeah. Well, you know, even was it Ananias who the Lord spoke to that? Yeah. The man by the name of Saul was coming to his house.
Well, not the Lord.
You're like, which Saul? And it's the Saul that's persecuting Christians, and that's what Ananias is. And he's supposed
not
to
my house.
Yeah. And yet he's supposed to lay his hands on him. He's supposed to touch him. Because Paul's blind, in order for his sight to be returned. And you know, you think of that whole thing and you go like, wow. Wow.
What faith to trust in the Lord.
Well, yeah.
To protect you.
Take a risk.
From this evil man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Take a risk. Sometimes you don't know what you're going to get into or what's going to happen, but you just know that's what God wants you to do. Yeah. So, you know, when Paul gives these qualifications, are they optional or are they essential? What do you think?
Essential.
I think they're pretty essential. I mean, you want to get as close as you can. And of course, you're not going to find somebody who's going to meet all of them.
And he wasn't a recent convert when he wrote this either.
Right. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think when it comes to deacons, which is like trustees, trustees is what you'd probably have today in most churches, and sometimes you'd have deacons. It just depends upon the denomination. But there you'll find that the deacons need to go through a time of testing. I mean, there has to be some time in their lives where they've been tested. Now, what that means, I'm not real sure. But it's just that you don't become a deacon like bang, just because you become a believer. You got to go through some things. You got to be able to deal with some things that take place. Maybe in the life of the church or in somebody's life who's coming to the church that you're involved in. And through that, it'll be revealed by others that, hey, you know, yeah, you really were there to help that person. You see a real change in that person because they've been spending time with you. Or you've been praying with that person or praying for that person, and we see evidences of that. So, Kathy, it reminds me of you.
Really?
I remember when we talked about Don.
Yeah.
If he'd ever come to church. And you said he'd never been to church.
Well, on a regular basis.
Yes, yeah. You know, and it was just like, I mean, you never pushed that with him
no.
at all. Because you didn't want that to become a rift.
No.
But then I'm just thinking about in the last, well, the last year for sure, I've just seen him mm-hmm. coming and being a part and
yeah.
flipping burgers.
And he's enjoying it.
Yeah, he enjoys. Yeah. You know, I just thought, wow, what a... And here they lived right across the street from the church. And, I mean, I didn't know. Never paid much attention to
them. You made an impression, evidently, when you went over to ask about the sign.
Well, that was, that was the thing.
He says, he had to tell me the whole story when I got home from work that day. He said, and he's the nicest guy to visit with. So,
yeah.